Welcome to ABA Happy Hour. So today, for today's podcast, we are so excited because we're going to have our first guest.
Whoop,
whoop. So we're going to start with the on the menu for today. As usual, we're going to start with our Define That segment where we go over our vocab of the day and we talk about the topics that we're going to discuss with our guest for today. And we are going to do our guest introduction and then we're going to talk about escape rooms. So that's going to be great, by the way. Like, do not skip that part. It's going to be great. Fantastic. And then we're going to talk about supervision struggles. So Jesse and I both mentioned that we're in grad school and we have to get supervision to get our credentials and be able to sit for our boards and take our exam and all that fun stuff. So we're just going to kind of hash out some of the supervision struggles that we have. And then, of course, last but definitely not least will be our last call, which is where we get to ask some rapid fire questions to our guest and they have to answer our questions.
There's no other option.
None. There's none. All right. So with that said, we're going to move on to our Define That segment.
Let's define that. So reinforcement is one of our vocabs of the day. Reinforcement occurs when a behavior increases because of a consequence of either adding or subtracting something from the environment.
Perfect. So I think we talked about SAFMEDs in the last podcast.
Accurate.
So that's the SAFMED definition. So I'm going to break it down and explain, kind of give an example of what that means. So reinforcement is anything that is going to increase the behavior that we want to see, right? So think about if you give a treat to your dog because they sit when you tell them to sit, that's reinforcement. If you give your kids an allowance because they do chores, that's reinforcement. It's anything that you are adding, or either sometimes you might take something away so that you're going to increase the whatever the behavior is that you want to see.
Did I say my example of with my children previously? Did I say that on the last podcast?
I don't think so.
I don't know why I would. We weren't talking about reinforcement, right? So that would be silly.
Why don't you share it? So what's your example?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much for opening the table for that. So we have a family D&D game and it is, yes, literally D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, like legit all these like fiery creatures and weird goblins and what have you. Swords and magical, like my daughter turns into a werewolf. It's great. So she's preparing to do that in real life. So we'll see how that pans out. But we play this game and it's been really fun. It's exciting, but it's like, I mean, it's a good like 2 hours. Like my brother DMs it. So it's like a family thing that we do, like, you know, virtually together. And so, so us and then him. And so it's like 2 hours and he does a great job, but you know, sometimes it's kind of slow moving, right? Like, I don't know if you ever played D&D, but like sometimes it's like, okay, like we could pick it up a little, you know? And if you're my brother and you're listening, please don't take offense. I'm sure you won't, but just in case, you've been my brother for a while. So, I finally started getting, I was like, oh man, reinforcement wise, like what can I do to like make this like more enjoyable while they're waiting? Right. And so I have started just getting Oreos and every 30 minutes they get an Oreo.
I think so. You told me about this, right? Because you said that part of it was like it was a struggle to even get them to like start the game, right?
Right. And it's like once we're doing it, like they're having fun, but it was just like, you're a parent,
yeah,
you're listening, I'm sure you understand. So.
Totally relate. Totally relate. I'm not a parent, but I'm a dog parent. True. I don't know if that counts, but
no,
yes.
It does. I mean, yeah, it's still behavior and it's like thing that you're trying to get to like, yeah, gonna get in trouble for calling a kid a thing. Anyways.
No one add us, okay? Don't add us. We understand that children are not things. We know that. Don't add us. It's okay.
I misspoke. I mean, it was just early, you know? Yeah, and it's gone so well since doing that. And, like, they look forward to it. And they're like, oh, can we have another Oreo? I'm like, it's only been, like, 25 minutes. Not yet.
I love that. I love that. So, okay. So that actually, Jesse, that's a really good example of non-contingent reinforcement, right? So with reinforcement, the previous definition that she gave, you give the reward or the treat or whatever you want to call it, the reinforcement for the behavior that you want to see. So it, the behavior has to occur first. So the reinforcement is contingent on the behavior happening. Well, with non-contingent reinforcement, which is the example that Jesse gave, where it's like 30 minutes and then you just give them an Oreo no matter what is happening at the time, that's non-contingent. So there's no specific behavior that they have to do. They just have to be there. They just have to be present. And then boom, they get an Oreo and everyone's happy and we have a great time. And then we move on and it's wonderful and I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, they could be laying on the floor doing bicycles. I don't know. If they're in the room, they get an Oreo.
Perfect. I love that. Excellent. So reinforcement is our first definition of the day. What's the next one, Jesse?
I'm so glad that you asked. It is supervision. So it's actually going to be about supervisor, but, you know, whatever. Working with what we got. So the supervisor is responsible for oversight. Oversight? Oversighting? Overseeing. Sorry. Let me try that again. The supervisor is responsible for overseeing all aspects of the applied behavior analytic repertoire of the supervisee, including assessment and treatment skills and ethical decision making, among others. That is from LeBlanc and Luiselli. Hopefully I said that right. I couldn't even say oversight, overseeing, so I'm working on it.
You gotta start somewhere, you know? Okay, so I guess I will just say that the reason we are breaking down what the supervisor is because obviously there's supervisors for lots of different things. This definition that Jesse provided is just specifically for what the supervisor, when we reference supervisors, as far as getting our hours for being able to work towards getting our test taken. I think we've explained this before, but just a quick recap, we have to get all of our coursework completed and we have to get a certain number of supervision hours to be eligible to take the BCBA exam. So it's important that we have a supervisor who can provide the oversight that we need for our supervision hours. And that's, again, just an ethical practice to make sure that we are being supervised as we're learning how to do all of the skills and necessary requirements to be a good solid BCBA, right? What's not in this definition is the supervisee, which is just the student in this role, right? So just so that's super clear, I think that that's pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. And I think just to add, like, the supervisee just doesn't get to do whatever they want, right? Like, they're
right
to take the supervisor's feedback and, you know, try to make some ethical decisions themselves and, you know, work. They have it, they are also bound to that same code, right? They just have someone kind of helping them along, essentially.
Absolutely. So typically what you might see is, like, your supervisor might assign you certain things when they feel that you're ready to take that on, because obviously you're not doing everything straight out of the gate. You know, they kind of try to baby step you into things. You know, you start with just a little bit, and then as they start to see your skill set grow, they should be kind of adding more and more to that. And we'll talk about that when we get more into the topic, and we'll kind of, when we're talking about supervision struggles and kind of what that looks like for not just our the guests that we're going to have, but also for you and I, because you and I are both supervisees, getting this supervision. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was gonna say something else, but I don't know what it was. So
That's okay. That's okay.
yeah, there it is. Done. It's too late now. Remember.
Yes, go. Go,
Okay.
go.
So, so I was sorry about the supervisee relationship. I don't know why words are so hard today. Supervisee relationship, right? So if you listen to our first podcast, we talked about shaping and successive approximations. And if you have not listened to it, I'm not going to tell you what it is. So you go listen to it right now. Or
Yes,
after you're done with this. Yeah.
this is a hint to listen to the first episode if you haven't already. Okay, go
That's it. That's all I had. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah, no, actually, I really like how you brought that back to our first episode. You're absolutely right. It is definitely a perfect example of, well, I guess it should be an ideal example of shaping, right?
Oh,
Because
I like
that's
that.
assuming that your supervision is perfect and goes the way that it should, right? I mean, there's a reason that we called this segment Supervision Struggles, because we're all human and it's definitely not ideal 100% of the time.
There, but we'll get into that
Boop, boop. But first, our guest. So, Sharina, we're just going to let you introduce yourself. So, just kind of tell everybody like a little bit about yourself, how you were introduced to ABA, and kind of how you got started in the field.
So, hi, I'm Sharina.
Hi, Sharina.
Guys. It's so weird. I never know what to say about myself, but I'll do my best. So, let's see. I was introduced briefly during undergrad. So, I was a psych major and I took a behavior analysis class. So, that's how I was introduced to ABA, but I didn't know that it was such a huge field. So after graduation, I started working and I got a job at a clinic as a behavior therapist. And that's when I saw, that's when I was doing what I had learned in class, kind of, without obviously supervision, and they were doing more stuff. So that's how I got into the field. And then, after I moved to Texas, I got into grad school, and now I'm here suffering in class, working, and just banging my head at the wall once in a while because it's just grad school and work life and all of that other good stuff. So yeah, that there's that.
Okay, awesome. So why don't you tell us then, like what you do as far as like working in the field?
I work at an in-home agency right now. So we provide services to clients in their home. We do some school settings. Since due to COVID, a lot of kids are not in school, but if they're in daycare or private schools and they need services there, so we provide that. So I've been in both home and school settings with clients. And it's fascinating seeing how behaviors change in both settings and how different the work and sessions look like in all these settings too.
Awesome. Perfect. Okay. And then, of course, because this is ABA happy hour, why don't you also tell us what you're drinking today?
Oh yeah, I have a bottle of wine called Reunite.
Very nice.
So that's my drink for this afternoon.
Can you maybe share with everyone who wasn't on this Zoom call earlier, maybe how you obtained that wine earlier?
I'm a very short person. I'm only 5 feet tall, and the bottle was on a shelf that I couldn't reach because obviously I'm short and I don't know where the step is. So I got a tong and and used the tong to bring the bottle forward and then caught it kind of. And I had to do the same with the wine glass because it was on the same shelf all the way up high. So tong is kind of my best friend. Solves all my short girl problems.
Like, I wish on the podcast we could have like a video section, and maybe that's what we need to do from now on. Like, a little clip would have been fantastic.
I'll send you a picture of me with the tong and getting a wine bottle.
Yes. Perfect.
That'll be like our episode two. Yeah, perfect.
I have no problem doing that.
I love that. That was definitely my favorite part for sure, is watching her get the wine bottle with the tongs. That was amazing.
Hey, I have to figure out ways to get things. You need what you need.
I love it. Yeah. So actually that brings us to our topic of the day, actually, which is...
Hold on, my friend. What are you drinking today?
You are right. Okay, so... Okay, sorry. So...
Then we can go there. Sorry.
You're good. So I actually have not been feeling well, like, all week this week. And I've been taking, like, you know, Tylenol and, like, other meds for, like, my sinuses and stuff. So I figured that maybe drinking wasn't the best idea. So unfortunately, I am just drinking a Canada Dry today.
There you go.
So that's where I'm at. All right, Jesse, what about you? What are you drinking today? I have to drink vicariously through everyone else.
Right. Yes. Very healthy choice you've made there. I have two glasses. One is a vegan mayonnaise glass, but has a margarita in it. Sounds gross. Margarita. The other one is in fact a beer glass, but it has water in it. So it's very confusing. I have very confusing glasses today. So
okay.
My mayonnaise jars have like spices in it. They're all used for spices.
So. They're so useful, right?
Like, they are.
Exactly. I have like a million jars. I love them.
Yeah. I've turned some of them into glasses for like when we make drinks and stuff because I have no matching glasses. It's kind of just do it. Yeah. I love that.
Does it say veganaise?
It does say veganaise. Yeah. Soy free, you know. So.
All right. Love it.
Okay, well, so now let's move on. Sorry.
Okay, so topic for today is reinforcement. So I want to start with, I think, was it last week or maybe the week before, for one of our classes, we had to read chapter 4 from the Pearson Cheney book that I'm gonna look at the actual title because I've called it Pearson Cheney for so long that I don't actually know the name of the book.
Hold on. I'm like, let me look. What is... I can't even tell.
It's Behavior Analysis and Learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. A biobehavioral approach. So this book is kind of cool, actually, of all the textbooks that we've read. This one has kind of been my favorite because it has you know, a lot of different examples of behavior. So, you know, normally it's just like the kid with autism is always the go-to example, but this book has a lot of different examples, and kind of breaks down, you know, behavior and our biology and how they kind of come together and where they meet. One of the things that they discussed in a chapter we were supposed to read a couple weeks ago was the,
like how you said supposed to read.
Well, I mean, I did technically read this chapter, you know, I skimmed it very well to get the answers that I needed, but not the point.
And if you're a professor, we read every word and loved it. Okay, there we go.
That's right. I didn't skip anything. I even read the footnotes, if you're listening, like all that stuff.
Such honest students.
Yes, there you go. I did not use the control find at all.
Never.
But one of the sections talks about Thorndike, who is one of, I don't know if we consider him like a founder, I guess. He's not necessarily a founder of ABA, but he is a founder of like reinforcement, if that makes sense. So he kind of started this whole thing. I don't know that he necessarily labeled it. I think Skinner labeled all of our stuff. But the reinforcement, what we call reinforcement, was originally kind of became a thing because of Thorndike. He had these puzzle boxes that he would put cats into, and it was kind of like a maze, if you want to think about it that way, and they had to kind of feel around and kind of find their way out. And so they had like things that they would step on that would like kind of open the door to let them out, or they had other, I don't remember exactly, but like maybe like a lever press or something that they were supposed to do. Either way, they were supposed to find their way out of the box, right? And he called them a puzzle box.
And I think, sorry, I just want to add real quick. I think like a non-ABA way to explain it or talk about it would be to say like trial and error learning, right? Go on.
Yeah. So exactly. So because in the reason, because he did call it trial and error learning. Mm-hmm. And the reason that he kind of labeled it as such was because what he found was he'd put this cat in there and maybe it would take him like 10 minutes to figure out his way out. But the second time he would put the cat in, he would find his way out a lot quicker. And he found that because the cat, quote unquote, learned how to get out of the box, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so all that to say, when I was reading that the other day, it kind of made me think of like escape rooms. You know, like have either of you guys done an escape room before?
I haven't.
No.
Sharina has not. I have done one with like work, and it was definitely an interesting experience because like everyone's personality comes out to you like in the escape room experience. But yes.
Yeah. Okay, so I personally haven't done an escape room. I did something, there's a place in Louisville called The Labyrinth that they tell you it's not like an escape room, but that's kind of what it made me think of. Like you had to solve the puzzles or whatever that were in there to get to the next room and all this other kind of stuff. It made me think of an escape room. They said it's not, but whatever. So for the purposes of this discussion, you know, I think it's fair to compare the two. But Jesse, do you want to tell us a little bit about your escape room experience?
Yeah. So, you know, you walk in, they, you know, lock the door, whatever they do. I don't know. Saw it in my memories the other day. So however that happens, you're in the room, you can't get out and you have to escape it. Right. And so typically like they might have, you know, like a prompt, like in this particular one, they had a screen that would randomly pop up with like little hints almost. Right. So really you're just kind of looking around for a bunch of stuff. And then the hints are, I felt like maybe they were very general. So then you're kind of like looking around for all this stuff. You're opening drawers, you're opening, like looking behind paintings and all these sorts of things. Just looking for a clue on like how to piece it together. So much like the cats in the puzzle box, like just trying to like, what is going to get us to the next thing, right? Like you're turning stuff, just seeing like what is going to pop up, right? And then, you know, as you're going, again, maybe the personality thing could be another conversation we could talk about, but the escape room itself, you know, you wind up in this back room or whatever that opened up because you turned something on the bar, you know, or whatever. And you go back there and then like, there's all this other stuff. Like, it's just like, thing after thing after thing, and it all winds up tying together and you get out. And of course, if you're in like one cool thing about the escape room, I don't know if the cats had this in the puzzle boxes, but they will be like, okay, y'all are taking a while, or you're like way off course. Try again. So kind of like a hot or cold thing. I think we talked about expensive approximations in our first episode. So that was like a nice little example there. but yeah, and eventually you get out. You know, you only have so much time in that particular one. So, and again, depending on who you're working with, it could be easier or harder. yeah, and then you wind up, and some of the things are like super weird. So again, you need more people to be able to kind of figure out, like, obviously that increases your chance of success, right? Theoretically.
Right. Yeah.
So, but no, it was super fun. We did, in fact, make it. I want to point that out. oh my God, y'all, we should do an escape room.
We should, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. When we can be in a room closed and not, like,
COVID is less of a thing. Right. Yeah. It'll always be a thing, but, like, less of a thing. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I like how you put it, less of a thing. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just to bring this back full circle, the reason that we're talking about escape rooms and Thorndike's puzzle box, we said that the topic of the day, our vocab of the day, whatever you want to call it, is reinforcement. So with the escape rooms, like you said, in order to get to, like, to get out of the room, you have to, like, piece these puzzles and, you know, clues or whatever together. Mm-hmm. So that is an example in real life of reinforcement, right? Mm-hmm. So you getting the clues correctly, you turning the right knob or opening the right drawer or whatever it may be that you're supposed to be doing is reinforced, because that leads to you gaining access to getting out of the room, which is then going to increase the chances that if you were to go back and do it again, you would turn that same knob or open that same drawer again, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just like with the cats, when they went in for the second or the third time, they were more likely to repeat whatever behavior that they did the first time that got them out. And that's reinforcement in a nutshell, right? Yeah. Obviously very simplified, but yes.
Yep.
So the cool part about reinforcement is it's everywhere, right? It's in the escape room examples. Mm-hmm. It's in our everyday life. It's what keeps our behavior going, right? Like when I go to start my car, I turn the key a certain way because that's been reinforced in the past, to where it turns my car on and I'm able to go wherever it is that I want to go. So it's in kind of everything that we do. It's what maintains the behaviors that we continue to engage in. Mm-hmm. So another thing that we just kind of wanted to talk about today in general was supervision and the supervision struggles, right? So all three of us.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, that's such a struggle.
All three of us we're in grad school. We're all in the same program. And so we all have to, we're in practicum together as well. And so we all have to get supervision from our on-site supervisors to ensure that we're meeting the requirements for our field so that we can test and all that fun stuff, right? So there is some reinforcement somewhere in there for us.
Is it? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. If you're a supervisor, I promise.
We are going to try to figure out where that reinforcement is today in this conversation. So we're just going to start by, we've already done our, define that segment where we broke down what supervision was, but we're going to talk about supervision from the RBT perspective.
Yeah.
So,
and Sharina, as our wonderful guest, we would love to hear from you. What is supervision like as an RBT? Let's start with that, right? So I know we're in take out the grad school part. Like, what is an RBT? Let's start there, actually.
So RBT is Registered Behavior Technician. I had to do a 40-hour coursework training and then get supervision hours, and then I had to take a test, fairly simple basic ABA test, and I got the certificate for a registered behavior technician. And fairly easy process. Almost all agencies provide it to new therapists, whoever they hire. If they don't have a certification, they'll do the process for them. So I'm from New York, right? When I was working in New York, the agencies I worked for, none of them required it. But when I moved to Texas, all the agencies were requiring it. So there was that difference. But I think now all agencies across the country are requiring RBT certification.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, like, some states have different
Yeah.
requirements of
Requirements.
certification.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, if I remember correctly, I don't know if y'all have heard this, but I think to become an RBT, that 40-hour training you were saying, I think that most places that even like online trainings that provide the training, I think a lot of it is free now.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like you don't even have to be a part of an agency,
No.
because especially because of the pandemic and COVID, like they're trying to help make it very accessible.
In some of the ABA groups I'm in, I've seen people post like just they've done the training, they just look for supervision because they have to get that done, get those hours done. So that's the only part I think is tricky, to get supervision from someone, because for that I think you would have to pay the BCBA, but the training itself, it's not that
Yeah, because like to be able to take the test, you have to A, have a high school diploma
hard.
or GED, I believe, and
Yeah.
then you take the 40-hour training. Then you have like that kind of like little mini test with the supervisor, like you're saying, for them to be like, okay,
Yeah.
you learned something in that training, great. And then you take the little multiple choice
Yeah.
exam. I say little, I mean it's takes a little bit of time, but
And just for
Basic.
those who might be listening who are not familiar with like anything about ABA, the RBTs tend to be like the frontline therapists who do the direct, what's the word
Therapy.
I'm looking for? Direct therapy,
Therapy.
the you know the service and that kind of thing with the actual client. And then the BCBA tends to be the one who oversees like the programming and provides supervision for the RBTs just to make sure that like the program is being followed and they're helping like the RBT problem solve when something's not going well, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, perfect.
Absolutely. And so now that we know what an RBT is, so and you've done all these things, you have the test,
Yeah.
you've been certified by the BACB, which is the Behavior Analysis Certification Board. Did I say that
Yeah.
right? Oh gosh, I should be
Yes.
so much more confident in that. So now you've done
I
all
think
that.
we say BACB so much that we forget what it stands for. So every time I see it, I'm like, and then I have to like kind of think about all the letters.
We like
Yeah.
live in acronyms, right?
Yeah.
Like we
ABA,
definitely do.
BACB, BCBA, all acronyms.
All of the things. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I
Yes.
feel that way, like, well, yeah, in general. But so you've done all these things. You're a registered behavior technician. You are in the world. You are providing this frontline therapy. You're awesome. You have this supervisor. What does that look like from an RBT perspective? Like, what is, like, how much do you get supervised? What does that like relationship look like? And I mean, it also could depend on the setting. You mentioned a lot of different settings, right? So, kind of give us a little some of your experience with your supervision as an RBT. We'll kind of move to student analyst stuff in a minute, but.
So there's been a lot. I've had really good experiences and I've had really bad experiences. So I'll start with the bad experience so I can end with the good experience, and everyone
I
can
love
remember
that.
the
And I think the only thing that
good
I'll add to that is let's make sure that we don't get too specific.
Yes, no. Oh, of course not. But yeah, there have been some struggles, not just like during this practicum, academic life, just like after getting RBT or working in different places. And so one of the places I've worked in, we didn't have a supervisor for the longest time. That was a huge struggle. because we didn't know what we were doing. Like, I had some knowledge, but you still need someone to tell you and guide you. So there wasn't
That's a
any
problem.
proper guidance. There wasn't anything. And I understood, like, they were trying to figure it out, but someone would come in and, do some things and leave, and they weren't familiar with the cases. So that I thought was a huge problem, and I was beyond frustrated. And I would just walk into like the offices and be like, I need like supervision. I need someone to tell me if I'm doing things right or wrong because I don't want to harm the client. And I can do that unknowingly or unintentionally. I can do that because I don't have that guidance, right? And I might have all the good intention in the heart, but that can happen. So I thought that was a struggle, but once everything fell in place, things got a lot better. Everyone was getting supervision regularly. Everyone was getting program updates regularly. But that initial struggle was just way too frustrating to overcome at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, ethics are a big deal. And sorry, I want to ask you another question just kind of based on that. Like, how would you say that some of those frustrations, like, does that impact your work with the client? I mean, obviously, like, for on a program level, it does because you're like, I don't know what's going on here, but like, does it impact like your relationship with them and how you work with them?
With the client or with the supervisors?
With the clients.
With the clients, I thought it did because some of it was just I was frustrated, and clients know when you get frustrated, so they feed off of that. So I even if I tried to not get everything in my way, but if I did, like, they saw me like stuttering, or they saw me struggling, it was just I can push and do whatever I want that day. And there was obviously that power struggle going on. But oftentimes I tried my best not to like let that affect us, and do things, make sure they were learning and improving, and I did it the best way I could. Yeah, that was it. But that was, I think, one of the worst experiences. Another one was where there's sometimes where like the supervisor wants to provide supervision and wants to help, be on the floor, but because of short staffing or because of other variables, they can't. And that's frustrating in a way that, they're there and they want to do it, but they can't. So they get frustrated because of all the work they have to do. And, they have their programming, they have to update, they have to do assessments, they have to do all of that. And if there is someone missing or if it's understaffed, they have to be on the floor with the client. So they're struggling too, and we can do so much to help. And we would try to help them as much as possible by asking questions as accurately as possible, or just being like, hey, I just need this one thing. But you could see like both parties were struggling at that point. And there would be days where like they would provide supervision, and like you could see they were happy. They're like, this is what I want to do, not the other thing. But and I just thought that was just such a big struggle because ABA in the field, like, RBTs burn out so quickly if they don't get proper training, or if they don't like what is happening, or if they didn't anticipate or predict like this was going to be such a tough thing to do. Because sometimes like we get clients who are tough, and they probably didn't even imagine like this could happen. Because when you hear work with kids, you think, oh, like cute little kids, you're just gonna play and do all these fun stuff. But there's more to the whole thing than just playing and being with the child and having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned burnout.
I
Okay, since
did.
we're there, let's just go there for a second. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we're going off script, y'all. All right. So burnout.
Yeah.
What is burnout? What does that lead to? Like, it sounds like the way you were describing, it's not just for the RBT, right? That might be burnt out. It sounds like a supervisor could also get burnt out.
Burnt
Like,
out, yeah.
what does that mean? Like, if you're burnt out.
If for me, burnout would mean that when they have given their all and they're just they don't have any more to give at that point. Like, you know, we go into this field, like I went into it loving the science of it. Like ABA, it's just so beautiful. It explains everything in life, why we do anything. It just explains it all. It's such a beautiful thing. Like, you know, there are other beautiful sciences, but ABA is just gorgeous. It's just
The 10 out of 10 would recommend.
yeah,
Okay.
obviously, but I think the work and the business side of it can be very tough and it can be overbearing at times. If they don't have the proper help or the proper staffing, it can lead to a lot of frustration. And I don't know what you guys have to say or like what do you think about that? But that's my take. Like if you're just doing a lot of these things and you feel overwhelmed, then that's when you get feel burnt out.
Yeah, no, I burnout is like a real life thing, right? Like I have personally experienced it. And it is like it's awful, right? Because like you said, like you go into this field wanting to make a difference and to really apply this knowledge that you know is very helpful, right? And being able to do that. And then when there's some of these like I don't know, would the word be bureaucratic? Is that like a ministry? I don't know, like kind of all this other stuff outside of it that kind of takes away from it and winds up being a barrier to treatment and you being able to work on these goals and work well together as a team and all these sorts of things, right? That can be really awful. I don't know how else to say it. It's awful. It sucks. Lydia, what are your
So
thoughts?
I'd like to, so just to kind of go back, I know we started this conversation by asking like, you know, what is supervision like from the RBT perspective? And you know, we talked about like the worst situations and like other things that can kind of get in the way of like the BCBAs providing that supervision. And just you know, you talked about it being like the bureaucratic administrative kind of side of things, but I wonder, and I think Jesse and I have talked about this before. I'm not an RBT. I'm kind of in a weird position. I get we came up with the term student analyst, but you know, wonder if that's if, you know, we can coin that as a term because you know, we're still in school and we're still learning all the things, but we are also providing some level of supervision to other people that we work with, as well as getting the supervision ourselves too, right? So, I wonder though, from just having experienced both like the best and the worst supervision myself, and seeing it, I guess, from both sides, how hard it is to kind of carve out that time and being able to be fully present is an issue that I keep coming up against, right? Where I'm supposed to be providing this training or providing this feedback to someone, but I'm also getting like, you know, 52 messages about something else, another situation that's also going on. So being fully present in that moment and really paying attention to what that staff member needs or has questions on in that moment is actually really difficult. And I think it kind of comes down to, I guess, like balance and balancing all of that stuff. And since, again, our topic is reinforcement for the day, I mean, it probably is very reinforcing to do that, to provide that training, to provide feedback and be there and see how things are going. So that probably is more reinforcing than all the other things. But I wonder if like, you know, doing the assessments and writing up the programs and all that stuff just takes so much time that sometimes the supervision part kind of gets put on the back burner.
But I feel like even with like the assessments and the program writing, like at times I've noticed like at least with not having enough staff, then when supervisor are having to do what an RBT has to do, that's when I saw the struggle a lot of times. And at that point, they couldn't even use that 2 3 hours to do the assessment, do the program writing, you know, like, and then they had to be on the floor with the client providing, doing what an RBT would be doing, and that just takes up so much of their time. And you know, it's not like there's not no solution to this, or like maybe there is, but no one had come up with it at that point. But it was just a constant frustration, like, we need people, but we don't have people.
And we
And
need good people, right? Like not just a body. And I want to speak to something you said, Lenine. You talked about being in the present moment, right? And so I'll throw in my little thing here. But y'all know ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, right, is part of ABA, right? And y'all know that I love that with all of my heart. And so one of the focuses of that is the present moment, right? So even within ABA, like we have like literally one of the pieces of the Hexaflex is the present moment. That should probably be its own thing, but so I won't go into it right here. But I think what's cool about our science is we can literally use it to make us more effective as well, right? Different pieces of it. And so and I think maybe we get so kind of focused on, you know, showing everyone, oh my gosh, here's this ABA and here's what it does, but we forget like, hey, we can use it on ourselves to make ourselves more effective as well, right?
Well, I think that the need for BCBAs right now is just so great that we can't meet the need, right? And I think that that's part of the problem is like when I have had really bad supervision, a lot of the times it's just because like the caseload that my BCBA has is overwhelming. Like, and it's unrealistic to think that they're going to meet all of the expectations that they're supposed to be doing, you know? So like they have too much quantity on their caseload to be doing quality work, you know? So some stuff just does really and truly slip through the cracks. And it's hard because I mean, ethically, we're supposed to be helping all of these people, right? So I think we feel ethically bound to try to help as many people as we can, which is why like our field right now is like growing exponentially because there is such a high demand for it. But at the same time, it does make me question like the quality of it, right? I mean, I think that for us three, and I can speak to this because I've seen all of your work before, right? I think that the three of us are super, like, we're great. We do quality work and we're passionate about what we do, and that's phenomenal. But I think there are people that slip through our field who don't necessarily meet that same standard, just because like I said, like the need is so great right now, you know? And so I just wonder that if our supervision could kind of meet a more balanced way of, you know, we don't have to do necessarily like handholding for everyone, but you know, something, right? One of the reasons I've always had a poor experience with supervision is because I keep hearing things like, you know, trust your instincts, you know, you know what you're doing, that kind of thing. And like that's fine. Like
Very
it's one thing
empowering.
to have it's one thing to have good instincts, and that's, you know, great, cool, whatever. But it doesn't mean that I never have questions or that I, you
You
know,
have
never
questions?
need support. Oh, right. I know, it surprised even myself.
Can't have questions. You gotta go with instinct.
Right, just go with your gut.
I clearly, but that doesn't reinforce my behavior when I have questions and my questions aren't being answered, you know? So supervision should not only be reinforcing for the person who's providing that supervision, right? I mean, you would at least hope so, but also for the person who's receiving on the receiving end of the feedback. Because if it's not reinforcing for me, then it's unlikely that I'm listening or taking into account the feedback that I'm being given. So I always struggle just to get the supervision because of all the people that needed it, they worried about me the least, you know?
And
So.
I think I'm going to use this to kind of segue the conversation or kind of forward progress the conversation. So it's kind of started as RBT. Obviously, the conversation is progressing itself, but I'm going to help guide it a little bit more. We talked about RBT, and I think based on just our conversation here, and of course, like our many conversations that we have all had, right? You know, being a student analyst, again, the term that we're using for this, being in training, like we are wanting to become BCBAs, board certified behavior analysts. We are wanting to be those supervisors ultimately at the end of the day, right? Like we are wanting to make that difference in the field and go forward. So as student analysts in training, you know, like what does, you know, Sharina, like how has, and Lenine, how has the transition from RBT to student analyst, you know, the supervision, like how has it changed? What does it look like? And like, what are the different needs, I guess, that you might need more as a student analyst versus as an RBT?
Do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So.
Okay. I thought you said, "Could you go first?"
Or like, I can go. I can
Okay. Yeah, Sharita, what? You are a guest. You're a guest. Oh, yeah. Guest first.
Yes, please go first.
let's see. Since I've joined the program, the BCBAs I've worked with, they've had, I guess, a little higher expectations for me than people who are not in an ABA program. Just, you know, doing more preference assessment during session, like have a balanced session, you know, making sure I'm keeping up with the understanding where there is deficit in the programming, because since I am an in-home service, supervisors don't see the client very like often, or, you know, not on a daily basis like I do. So if there is something, they're very open to hearing what the client needs, or, you know, where they need more help, or if I have feedback, they're very receptive to all of that. And if I suggest, like, I think we should make a tweak here, they're like, okay, let's do that. And, you know, we test it out right away. I had one person was just like, you know, if you want to do it and then send it to me and we'll look over it together and then see, you know, if I have to for comments or if I want to change something, I'll send it back to you and we can work on it as a team. So there's that, helping out with assessments, program writing, just talking to parents, kind of like, hey, we're going to do this. I think this is where the client's going to benefit, or this is not working, we should change. You know, they're trusting me more with stuff like that too. Just having like open communication in between the three parties is, I think, a very important thing at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I've had a similar experience with like where I'm at now, because I don't work with kids. We talked about that when I did like my intro and everything. Like I work with adults, so it does look a little bit different. And for me, I think that when I was already in my grad program when I got the job that I have now, and I think that Justin kind of being given a little more leeway, and I can't tell you that was just because I'm in the grad program or anything like that, but maybe so, but just given that leeway of, you know, being able to try things and kind of problem solve myself. You know, we talked about like with an RBT, part of the BCBA's job is to provide like the overlap and the oversight on what they're doing, and then to help them problem solve in some of those areas when things aren't working. And so for me, just being given that leeway to just kind of just try stuff and just kind of do all the things. I mean, I was still given oversight and that kind of thing, obviously, because I'm not a BCBA, but yeah, just given that space and that freedom to kind of make the call and really them relying on what my take on the situation is and that kind of thing, which I think is important, because as someone who is going to eventually become the BCBA who has to make these decisions, it's important to have the confidence to make those decisions and to feel like you can, or you know how, or that kind of thing. And there's in my opinion, no better way to do that unless you experience it before right. it becomes like a requirement of you.
So it's kind of like an escape room.
Kind of, yeah. Pretty much, I think all of life is kind of like an escape room. You're always looking for the right door to go through. But
we just got philosophical in here.
But yeah. Yeah, dropping knowledge. It's what I'm about, you know?
Love it. And since our topic is reinforcement, the contingencies for reinforcement have changed since being in a school than not being in an ABA program, because there's more expectation. You're getting your, you know, feedback in a more critical way than just, you know, like explaining things in a layman terms. Then BCBAs are trying to explain things in behavior analytic terms. So all the contingencies have shifted from, you know, we'll kind of like help you through everything to, okay, like you tell me what it is and then I reinforce you and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love it. To sum it up, really, is, you know, as people, we're always looking for that reinforcement, right?
Exactly.
And it's definitely...
We want to know that what we're doing is the right thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it shifts from, as an RBT, your reinforcement is provided whenever you implement the procedures that are given to you correctly, mm-hmm. right? So you're not having to figure anything out. You're just supposed to do all the things. Whereas... as someone who's more in that student analyst position, then it becomes, you know, your reinforcement shifts now to, okay, well, what can you do to get the student or the client that you're working with in a better position than they were before, you know? And so then your reinforcement is shifting from not just doing the things, but figuring them out as well, which is a different skill set that you have to start using and that kind of thing. And then for for sure. Oh my gosh. Yes. And then as a BCBA, I mean, there's just so many things that go into that, right? Then you also have to be the one to then provide the supervision. And so then your reinforcement is contingent on that of, can you provide feedback in a way to where this other person can do what you were doing before? And that's, I'm learning very difficult. It's one of my least favorite things. Like, I love training and I think that that part is so much fun, but sometimes I do have to like, honestly, just kind of check myself because I'm like, okay, well, I've explained it to you. Like, you should be able to just do it now, you know? But we know from our clients, like, we can't just tell them how to do something and they do it. Right.
Right.
So it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. So
I think in a way, task analysis, task lists are one of my favorite things. And when I learned about them and when I started doing it, I'm like, this is so nice. Like, we should break everything down. Not everything, but like some of the things.
Everything down. Is a task analysis.
Yes. Like,
and you can use it everywhere with everyone, with kids, with parents, with husbands, with, you know, with everyone.
Yeah, for sure. I love it. Oh my gosh. Analysis too.
Side note, my partner told me I have to give them a shout out because they gave me the margarita and brought me food during our recording. So there it is. There's the shout out.
Yay.
Sorry, before I get myself in trouble. Okay. Yep. There it is.
I should do that too. My husband made me breakfast this morning.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. All these shout outs. My sister brought me Chipotle. Shout out again. Yay. Yes. Everybody is well fed on this podcast. That's important.
And obviously because other people fed us, not because we know how to do it ourselves.
Right. Exactly. See, again, that's another example of reinforcement. When they bring us the food, we give them a shout out. There you go. That's how it works.
There it is. Done.
Oh, man. Okay, so something I did want to ask just about supervision, because my mindset just as a human, how I am, is I always want to be thinking like ahead, like, okay, I've had this horrible experience or I've had this really great experience. How can I replicate that, right? So I guess my question is, all three of us are going to be future BCBAs in definitely within the next like year, right? So
I like that confidence. We're gonna pass that test.
that's
Yeah.
right. We
Yeah.
sure are. And we're going to get ourselves all the way out of this grad program. However we need to do it, we're getting out.
Again, because we love it so much,
We
right?
can't wait to leave.
The
Chicago school forever. For life.
Oh man.
Sorry, you
Okay.
had a question.
So my question is, as we are going to be the ones providing the supervision moving forward, what do you think is a good foundation, I get what are the three things that are like most important, I guess, to providing really good supervision? So like I mean, it could be more than three, obviously, but like if it, so for example, I'll go first. I think that the key to really good supervision is consistency, competency-based learning, and like being available for questions and feedback. That I think if you have those things, you can make all the other variables and stuff kind of work if you have those three. So.
No, I completely agree. And one thing my company does is they send us written feedback. So, strengths, weakness, and things to work on.
I
And
love
that helps me a lot because I can read
that.
it and it's in my file. And I can go back to see, did I work on it or did I not? I don't do that often, but it's
Like
still
your task
there.
analysis.
Yeah, it's like my own task analysis. Like this is where I need to work on more. Like I need to maybe have a better pacing session or do more preference assessment with a particular client. So stuff like that helps a lot, and just being available. Oh my God, that helps so much. Like if I send a text or if I send an email, like I've sent a bunch of panic emails during COVID. But my BCBAs are great. They're like, it's okay, calm down. You're doing great. Like I've got those. But yeah, COVID was really hard. It threw off all the balance in my life, all the supervision balance in my life, all the work balance in my life. So it just threw everything off. But it's getting back to like, I think my work life is getting back to some normalcy to pre-COVID, which I kind of like now. Like I have the supervisions are coming back to in their normal pace, and people are just, yes, there is COVID, but we have all these other things to do too. So things are getting better work-wise, supervisions are getting better, thank God. But yeah, there's definitely consistency is key and communication is key.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. Okay, what about you, Jesse?
Ooh. Okay, so the question is, what is the question? Start
The question is, what do you think are like the key components to having, or not having, but providing really good supervision?
Okay. Yeah, I've had good and bad supervision experiences, not just in ABA, but also in my other life as in therapy and counsel as a counselor. And for me, what is really helpful is someone who I'm going to use the word empathetic, but I don't mean that like they just let me complain or talk the whole time, right? But like that they actually listen to what I have to say and take into account, like if I'm like, oh man, like my kids are being wild this week or whatever, they're like, oh, okay, like yeah, that sucks. And then like just kind of like having like a more personable relationship, if that makes sense. And being able to have like essentially build that rapport, right? Which is what we do with our clients also. So having that rapport, I think, is ultimate. 'Cause like if I don't think you care about me, again, same with my clients, right? Like if they don't think I care about them, like I'm not going to be able to be effective with them. And so feeling that from a supervisor to me is very important. Again, they don't have to care about like every little detail of my life. I don't need them asking me a whole bunch of questions either, to be clear. But like, you know, just being able to know that like they have an interest in me as a person, right? And not necessarily just my product, right? Of therapy or data or whatever. I would say that's ultimately like a really big deal. And then like, as y'all were saying, talking about like, you know, a lot of things have been put on us, right? Like as we're moving forward and becoming, having more responsibilities, right? And taking on more of those responsibilities. And it's like, oh, you're supposed to figure out what to do now, right? So for me, like being able to get feedback on, okay, is what I said like valid or is it crazy? I don't know, you know? like getting that. And now that I'm also now supervising RBTs as well, like getting that feedback on like how to do that appropriately. Like I was talking to my partner today and I was like, I just wanted to be like, absolutely not. Why are you even doing this? Right. And then I was like, well, that would be awful. And if you're my supervisee and you're listening, I love you all. I want to be very clear about that. And I want to be better. And that is why I sought supervision. So I know how to do this better. so I asked my supervisor though, I was like, I'm kind of frustrated because like I've said this a couple times and I don't really know how else to do it. Right. And so I think just getting that feedback, I like feedback. Like I know I don't know everything and I know there's a lot of stuff I don't know. Right. Granted, I don't necessarily like being talked down to, right. Like, cause I'm not completely an idiot, but I do like things being explained to me and, really just full circle. Right. Like I like to understand why we're doing it. So the science behind it, right.
Yeah.
You know, you throw some ABA terms at it and explain it to me. I'm like, oh, cool. I get it. I know it's true. Like, that makes sense. So I think for me, that's it. Really, it's like a more, just a lot of communication. I think as you were saying, Serena, right? Like, I think that and is so essential. Like rapport and communication are really like the biggest pieces of of an appropriate supervision experience in my opinion.
A few of my best relationships with my supervisors, and not just from here, from New York too, are like supervisors who've taken an interest in what I'm doing other than just work. So the two BCPAs, the first one and the second person who like inspired me to like, you know, that final push into ABA, like they were just so amazing in explaining everything, because when I first started, obviously I didn't know squat. Like when they asked me to do like, oh, we're just gonna, so I think we had to do a program where we were teaching assertiveness, and I had to literally bother my client, and I was just like, when I first read it, I'm like, wait, what? I'm gonna just like pull hair, and like I was like, how am I gonna do this? And when my BCP explained it to me, I was like, that makes so much sense. Like, you know, that's going to happen in real life. And those little explanations as to why we're doing certain things in our therapy setting and why we're teaching a certain way helped so much that like that made me want to do better and learn more. And as an RBT, I asked a lot of questions. So if anything didn't make sense to me, I would ask the question. I didn't care if I sounded dumb or if I sounded condescending. I like did not give a shit about it. I was just, explain it to me. I need explanation right now. And I like if it's something new, I would be like, am I doing it correctly? Like I needed that reinforcement, like that immediate reinforcement, just to say, okay, like this is right or this is wrong. So it can be like a bad behavior, you need to go away. So, you know, I as an RBT, you have to ask a lot of questions just to get that out of your supervisor too, because supervisors, for them to know what to tell you or what feedbacks to give you, they need to know where you're struggling. So that's one of the things I did as an RBT, like wherever I was struggling, I would let them know, hey, this is where I'm struggling, this one program where I'm struggling, or like, you know, make sure they were aware of my weaknesses, or if I'm not running something, like, hey, I'm not running something because I'm learning it myself.
So no, I think that's so important. Like, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
And so having those explanations and then being able to ask questions and like getting answers is so important. Right.
Exactly.
But I like that both of you guys highlighted like the relationship part of that, because I think that especially like as BCBAs, we can get so caught up in the data side. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that that's part of why as a field, like our field has kind of a negative reputation overall sometimes, is because we do forget the importance of the relationship with that person and the rapport building, and how far that really does go, not just with, you know, our supervisees or anything like that, but also with, you know, the families that we're working with, other fields and other specialties that we mm-hmm. have to work with. The relationship with them as people, it also matters, you know. Clinical skills wasn't one of my favorite classes, but one thing that I do think that was highlighted a lot in that class when we would do those what do you call it? The little skit thing that we had to do and practice all of that.
Okay.
You know, whatever. they were so ridiculous, but like, you know, we had difficult people that we were supposed to role play how to, you know, talk and communicate with them despite them just being difficult for what seemed like to us no real reason. But you know, if they're having like a bad day and someone, you know, is giving you all the attitude in the world because of their bad day, you know, like just addressing that and just talking to them as people could make a huge difference, and then not only help your rapport and everything like that along the way. So
I have a similar thing. Like, I didn't like that class a lot because I was confused a lot, but the skits did help with talking to parents and, you know, talking to parents when things weren't like I think we defined it as high pressure, high something.
Oh yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah,
difficult. Something personality.
High conflict.
Yeah.
So, Jesse
paid attention.
Yep.
Because I did like that class, but okay. Again, therapist, so I, you know, have that life.
Maybe you can explain to us a lot of the things that weren't explained so accurately.
Right. We'll circle back to that.
We'll circle back. The whole episode. I would love a soft skills episode. All over it. I'm all over it.
Okay. So we'll learn about that in another episode. But benefit from that class was that I kind of got to learn. And when I do interact with someone who is high conflict, I just go back to that, what we had learned and what we had reviewed, and kind of just like, you know, soft tone and redirect the conversation to where I want it to go, and just, you know, remind them. So this, you know, like, I am not allowed to talk about this, but hey, this is where the progress is, or this is where we need to work on, and kind of slip away from there as soon as possible and let my BCBA know, hey, we had this really uncomfortable conversation. What do I do next? Or this is what I had said. Is it okay? Just keeping them in the loop that there might be some problems or this has happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just seeing people as people.
Yeah.
You know, like we come in to someone's home, especially, you know, I'm not working in home right now, but when I was, like, I had to constantly remind myself, like, I'm coming into someone's house, you know, where they live, where they're super comfortable, you know, and I'm like showing them what to do with their kid. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many different ways that could be weird and awkward. And so rapport matters so very much.
Exactly.
And if we just see them as like a couple of data points or, you know, whatever, then we're not really gonna reach them effectively. So,
right.
Yeah, I definitely, it's hard though. It's not
it
really
is.
Easy.
It is. Because, you know, like, everyone's day varies. And even though we work with the same client, I don't know, for me, I think every session looks different because every day something new happened, like, didn't get enough sleep, didn't eat, you know, like, there's so much going on with these people's lives. And, you know, like, there are days I go in and I'm, like, half asleep still. It's early in the morning and coffee didn't hit yet. And, like, they're asking me a question. I'm, like, 10 seconds later, oh, yes, that happened. Or like, yeah, good morning. And I'm like, God, coffee, come on. Like, Get to work, man. Like, this needs to happen soon. But things happen, and like, the families, they do like welcome us, and most of the families I've worked with, they were very sweet, they were very welcoming, and very accommodating, receptive to everything we've said. Or if they didn't like it, they said it at work, like, we don't like this, we don't want to do this. So, okay,
Right.
yeah,
Yeah. That'd be
but
cool to have communication. So I know we've talked about what would be a good, like our best supervision experience, right? Like what we really get out of that. Like, do you have an example, obviously without giving too many specifics and respecting confidentiality and all that, of a supervision experience that was like the best?
I don't think any particular was the best, but there were aspects of all of them that were really good and that worked for me a lot. So some of them I've mentioned, like having a written feedback works well, because during the session, there's so much going on that even though your supervisor is saying something, you might not pay attention because you have your client there, or you have to like do all these other things. So having that written feedback helps a lot. Like, I can go back and read it and ask questions, or just review it. Explaining something to someone new, or even like someone who's in school, just explaining to them why we're doing something, why the program is implemented, or why we're using this particular procedure on this client and a different procedure on another client. Just having like understanding those differences helps me a lot, and just communicating, like, this is just, communication, being available for questions, understanding that things happen, and it's life all in all. So all of that helps a lot. But I think communication and feedback is huge. And I think rapport too. Because if you don't have a good rapport with your BCBA, you're not going to want to work with them, and you're not going to want to see them. Supervision might be aversive to them at that point.
last call. So, Sharina, we maybe didn't send you all the questions that we wanted to ask you today.
Okay.
So,
Dun, dun, dun.
Surprise!
So, are you ready? Do you have wine poured? Like, are you
Yeah,
ready to
I'm
go?
here.
Okay, great, great. Okay, so these questions, you only have a certain amount of time to answer them. This is not.
Oh my God, is there a quiz? Don't give me a quiz.
It's a quiz. The
I
first one is the biggest one. So, are you ready for the first question?
No. Yes.
I think once you hear the first question, you'll see how funny it is that you're responding this way.
Okay, I'm ready.
Do you get PTSD when I say the word SAF meds?
Oh,
Okay, we'll move to something a little more fun. I think we explained SAF meds in the first episode, right?
Yes, we
Okay,
did.
great.
Yeah.
Okay, great, great. Okay. I see you listen to it. It's beautiful.
I
Okay.
did. I can
When you
help.
listen, you eventually get to come on our podcast. There we
Yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Current want some reinforcement out there. All right. Strangest thing that you've taken data on.
Strangest thing. I can't think of one. I really no. Yeah, I can't think of one.
Okay, that's fair. That's
Yeah.
fair.
All right, last question. And this is the most important question, though, out of literally all of them. This is the
Yes.
most important. Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
All right, here we go. What liquid would you want to come out of your finger for the rest of your life, Sharina?
Want tequila to come out of my finger, so anyone
Oh,
who hears
yes.
this is
Yes, Sharina. Exactly. I said, see, I said wine.
Yeah.
Jesse wanted some type of like dressing. I don't
Oh,
know.
it's so good. God is dressing, y'all. I had it this week. It was great.
What dressing?
It's great. Green goddess dressing. Auntie
Okay.
Anne. Yeah, no, Auntie Annie's, whatever it is. Yeah. It's good on everything, like literally everything.
I get the Green Goddess from Trader Joe's. They're
The
so good too. Trader Joe's Green Goddess.
Oh yeah. It's not that one, but it's probably fairly similar. Yeah.
Probably.
No, guys, literally no. I'm with her on the tequila 100%.
Yeah, tequila out of my house, it'll sanitize them, it'll help.
Yeah, there you
Yep.
go.
It's got a lot of purposes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right.
But oh yeah, saffnets are awful.
Look, we're coming back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real PTSD right there.
That
You are not alone, Sharina. You are not
No.
alone.
Thank you. I'll get happiness knowing that you guys are suffering with me.
Here we are. Here we
Yeah.
are. Well,
No.
I think that you
This
should
was
stay
really
with us.
fun.
Yeah.
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 This
As
was
you're like,
fun.
okay, let's go. Okay. All right. Yeah.
My gosh.
I just want the listeners to know this can go on forever.
Yeah, I could.
It
Legit.
really could, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we honestly should probably stop it soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. We'll make it awkward.
It was nice being here. Thank you
Yeah.
guys for inviting me. Invite me again. This is fun.
Yes, thank you for being
I'm just
here as
letting
our guest.
I love it.
Let's do the I drink and I try to know things.
Excellent. I drink and I try to know things. The way positive reinforcement is carried out is more important than the amount. The real problem is not whether machines think, but whether men do. Society attacks early when the individual is helpless. Give me a child, and I'll shape him into anything. B.F. Skinner.
So, as you guys know from the previous episode, our belief here at ABA Happy Hour is that a Skinner quote a day keeps the mentalism away.
Preach.
So, I don't know if we, I think we talked about mentalism a little bit, but just really quickly for the last time, I think, we are going to explain that mentalism is kind of the all-encompassing term that we use in the ABA field. I think a good way that maybe we could sum up mentalism as far just from the ABA perspective would be anything not behavior, right? So if
Yeah.
it's not something concrete that you can measure and you can look at and that's really objective, then we consider that to be mentalistic.
Mentalism is it's not super tangible, right? Like it does, it's more like it can lead to circular reasoning, which means that you just kind of beat around the bush a little bit without actually really getting at what it is.
Right.
And I do not mean that counseling is that. Just mentalism in general, that is how typically behavior analysis would describe that, right? So like for example, anxiety, like behavior analysis is like, like what is this, but the specific behaviors and then like what happens before, what happens after, like we can work with that.
Okay. So, all that to say, that B.F. Skinner again was our founder, and he believed in all things behavior. So, a Skinner quote a day keeps the mentalism away, guys. So, going back to the quote that was mentioned about reinforcement, which was our topic of the day, basically, just to break down the quote, what that's saying is that with a really good reinforcement contingency, you can shape behavior to kind of do what you want or need it to do. So for those of you that are that heard the last line, give me a child and I'll shape him to be anything, don't at us. What he's saying is that the environment around the child shapes their behavior in such a way that they could potentially become anything, right? So if we just examine our own environments that we live in today, that we lived in when we were children, we can backtrace a lot of the behaviors that we're doing now to the reinforcement that we got when we were kids, or maybe even the reinforcement we didn't get when we were kids, right? So that's what that means. Don't add us. Don't blow up our email because you don't like the quote. We didn't say it. Skinner did. Okay.
And I mean, it's, you know, I think about that specific line, right? And I like from a parenting perspective, from a like just teaching and working with kids, right? Like, because, you know, I work with some younger kids, right? Like, that is like prevention, right? Like that is like first line, right? Being able to do that. And as a parent, like I'm always like, guys, my job is to teach you how to like be independent so you don't need me for the rest of your life, right? Please go make your own sandwich, you know? here's an Oreo, you know? But like you have to shape that behavior, right? Like kids don't just know. Like they're not just like these magical like, oh, like, and you're like, oh, well, like they see me do it. And it's like, no, no. Like sometimes you have to literally spell it out for a kid, right? Like to teach them, right? And so,
yeah,
again, like depending on their environment and what you're teaching them totally depends on like how they receive that.
Yeah. But they're, you know, you talked about your kids, like, you don't want your kids to be reliant on you for the rest of your life. So it's important that they start doing things independently and learning those skills now so that when they leave and they move out and they go to college and they go wherever, I don't know, wherever no. it is that they choose to do, they know how to do some of those basic independent living skills that we all need to be successful on our own. And that's what Skinner is getting at, is that if you want your child to be a superstar athlete, maybe, right, you have to shape and reinforce those behaviors. So you have to provide reinforcement when they go out there and they play basketball in the backyard, or they're looking up YouTube videos about how to, you know, shoot better free throws or whatever the case may be. I don't know, that was the first thing that came to mind, guys. I don't know. But
if they want to.
Yes. Yes. Again, because we are not changing behavior or shaping behavior because we want to. Right? So,
but if it is for their quality of life, like having a D&D game with your family because they're delightful and you love your mother. Please don't at me. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, we could get into a whole discussion about like children's behaviors and just in general, and you know, and that could be like legit a whole podcast.
I was like, I could do a whole podcast just for me, like just me talking it out, and like it would be like a whole therapy for me.
I don't have kids, but I have had so many young clients, and like after you spend so much time with a client, sometimes I'm not gonna say that because parents are gonna be super pissed. I know it's not the same as like having the kid myself. I get it,
right?
I super get that. However, with that said, when you spend so much time and devote so much energy to a child, it's definitely easier to understand the parental perspective. So I definitely, after working in this field and with children, have a completely different respect for parents, including my own that had to deal with me. So mom, if you're listening, I appreciate you. There you go.
That's so kind.
Yeah, I'm gonna hear about this later for sure. But that's okay.
Oh, do I have to say something to my parents now?
No, everyone. No, do you? You are a parent. Appreciate yourself.
Oh, okay. I do appreciate my parents, but I also, I'll take, Look at me go.
Your
parenting. Here it is.
Yes.
Success.
Your kids children life. They will so appreciate you when they get older, even if they don't say it.
I think that's the operative word, when they get older. And that's okay. I can wait. I can be patient.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hindsight is 2020, right? I mean,
Don't say 2020 ever again.
sorry, you're right. Hashtag triggered. You're absolutely right. How about this? With hindsight comes
Okay, I'll
clarity.
take that. Yeah, that's fine.
Yes. And when they get older, they will look back and they will see how you shaped their behavior. They will see the reinforcement
All
that
that
you provided.
reinforcement. It's
And they will see
encouraging.
how that they will see how that shaped their future and who they have become as people. And that, again, is the point that Skinner is making, is that your children, I feel like every parent can kind of take, oh my gosh, and I say this with a grain of salt, mom, if you're listening, with a grain of salt, every parent can take some responsibility for how their children turned out because of, again, all of the behavior that was shaped as a kid really comes out when you're an adult. I mean, my goodness, it really, oof, wow. And like sometimes it's good, and sometimes it's not great.
We could do a whole segment on learning history and like
Yes,
effects of that.
I think we should have a whole podcast about parents and how they shape behavior.
All right. Well, I'm not saying it'll be the next one, but we do have a couple other guests lined up. We're ready. We're ready.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. And with that, we're out.